Robinson from downtown Kenosha. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. We sure appreciate it. And support downtown Kenosha. So we'll see you next time. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iquinta for Community Matters, and our guest this Saturday morning is Alicia Chauvin, president of the South Shore Realtors Association. Good morning, Alicia.
Good morning, Len.
Thank you for being with us this morning. We're going to talk today about particularly the residential real estate markets in southeastern Wisconsin, with specific emphasis on Kenosha, Racine, but I think we'll be drifting into the surrounding area, and the basic situation is the same within the reach of the signal of this station. Alicia, currently available housing stock in the Kenosha Racine area, what's your assessment of how we're doing in terms of having housing stock available for people who want to start out and get their first house, for a starter? And then maybe what is the situation for people who want to move up, have a couple of kids, and want to get into a bigger house? What's the real estate market look like for families and for single professionals here right now?
Sure, that's a very good question. It is something that is on the minds of quite a few people, because a lot of what we're hearing in the news and in, you know, the profession and with buyers and sellers is the housing shortage and the properties that are, you know, lack of properties that are available in Kenosha and Racine, but even statewide and within the country. So that's a challenge all over the place, but Kenosha and Racine specifically are feeling it.
Have you had any examples that come to mind of people you've talked to or stories you've heard that illustrate what it's been like for people?
Right, absolutely. So last year we felt a very strong push of the lack of inventory with clients that I was working with, where they were looking for properties, and there were oftentimes multiple offers, and not just one or two. There were eight or nine offers coming in within hours of the property being listed. So it's created a bit of chaos, excitement, obviously, but also chaos, and you know, sometimes buyer remorse, sometimes seller fears of, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? I don't have a property identified. So it's definitely created some challenges.
Are there differences in that scenario with respect to the price point of what people are looking to buy into?
The price point, interestingly, if you're looking at luxury, we weren't seeing that level of activity if you're looking at luxury homes. But when you're looking at anything from, you know, that first-time buyer house in Kenosha, Racine, anywhere between $100,000 and $200,000 even, those were the ones that were, there was just such a tremendous lack. And then even the move up, you know, if you're looking at kind of a price point for that, $200,000 to $300,000, even that was tremendously difficult to find.
Wow. Now, you're president of the South Shore Realtors Association. Let's take a step in. There never used to be a South Shore Realtors Association. It suddenly appeared a couple of years ago. Tell us.
Okay. So there was a merger between Kenosha Realtors Association and the Racine Realtors Association several years back that created South Shore Realtors Association. And I've been on the board for the past several years. I've been involved with the association my whole career. So I've kind of watched that evolve over the years.
What were the reasons for the merger?
The reasons for the merger, I would say probably the biggest one was to create a stronger association in southeastern Wisconsin.
Well, good. And it makes so much sense for us to do a lot of things together. In Kenosha and Racine, we have many different problems, but most of the big problems are very, very similar, it seems to me.
Absolutely. And I think just logistically, if you look at the size of the two cities and the interchange, how much we can move back and forth between both, it just makes good sense.
These days, it's really hard to find a professional business that doesn't have offices in both communities.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Now, do you just cover Kenosha and Racine counties, or do you, so your organization is specific to the county lines, is that it?
Yeah. Well, we do have some members that will prefer to belong to our association, even if they're outside of it. And, so we have some members who are from Milwaukee. We have some secondary members who hold license in another area as well. We have affiliate members. So there is some movement as far as those boundaries go. But
so you get an idea as being president of this organization, then you get some feelers and information from really more the region than just these two little counties. Then.
Oh, absolutely.
That's great. Now, a lot of people are confused about the term realtor. Okay. Now, you're with a realtor group. You're with South Shore.
South Shore Realtors Association.
Or Shore West, rather.
And then Shore West Realtors, correct.
They're so close. Shore West Realtors Association, and you're president of the South Shore Realtors Professional Organization. And Shore West is both communities, too.
Shore West, yeah. We're throughout all of southeastern Wisconsin. We've got offices all over.
Oh, so what is a realtor as opposed to just some guy selling a house?
I appreciate that question. So there is a real estate agent or a real estate licensee who has taken the 72-hour pre-licensure course and is practicing real estate. A realtor goes through the new membership orientation and subscribes to the code of ethics. And I'm actually the chairperson of the committee for the new membership orientation. That's the one committee that I've been on since I started in real estate. And so I get to watch all of the new members coming in and learning about practicing real estate and becoming a realtor and being sworn in.
So this is a professional organization that it does educational work and really helps establish standards of conduct.
Absolutely.
And allows people from the communities of realtors to interact with each other in order
right.
to help their clients better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Being involved as a realtor is, I think, just such a tremendous it makes things so much better for the realtor to be able to understand what they're doing, whether it's networking with others outside of their company, learning this profession. That's extremely helpful.
So people buying and selling a home, I'm told, are advised to ask whether an individual is a realtor to know that they have these additional professional involvements and accomplishments and certifications.
Yeah, you'll see the National Association of Realtors actually puts out commercials so that there is an awareness of what a realtor is versus a licensee.
Now, Alicia Chauvin, president of South Shore Realtors Association, besides being president of the Realtors Association, what do you do in real life besides that, besides holding the gavel?
Sure. I keep very busy. I am the sales director of my local office here at Shore West Realtors. So I work with all of the agents coming in and helping them with beginning, building, and growing their businesses. I am also finishing up my degree in organizational management. I'll be done with that this year. So nighttime, full-time student. I'm a mom of four, a grandma of one, and I enjoy poetry. I enjoy riding my motorcycle. I enjoy camping, all sorts of fun things.
Well, that's great. Now, have you experienced as well as buying and selling property in terms of rental and rental management as well?
I have. I worked in property management prior to real estate, so I'm actually just starting my 20th year in real estate now. And prior to that, I worked in property management for years. And so I understand that. And also, I own rental property.
Well, that's enough to keep you busy, I think.
Just a little bit.
Alicia, What trends are you seeing in residential real estate over the last few years? And I'm sure that you've seen impacts from the Great Recession. I'm sure you've seen impacts in terms of the recovery. I'm sure you've seen impacts in terms of Foxconn and that associated development. What are your observations?
Yeah, certainly all of those. I would say the trends over the last couple years, we've seen the trend of interest rates being incredibly low. And that's something that I think is almost assumed as a norm now in comparison to, 10, 15 years ago. This was just unheard of. This was historic lows. It's just been that way for so long now that people just assume that it's normal. And those of us who were in the industry longer know that it's not. And there's predecessors to me that know 18% interest and, creative financing. So
now I've lived long enough to see all that, and it sort of blows my mind to see what interest rates are. So what's the effect of that?
So the effect of that is that there is more buyers. Buyers can buy more property because they can qualify for a higher loan with a lower interest rate. So there is that. And then there is the, there's the student debt, wondering what that's doing to the, to the kids who would be buying houses now. Is their student debt too high so that their debt-to-income ratio is off? Is that impacting what's happening in the real estate market? I've got kids. I've got one son who's 27 who just bought his own house, and then I've got a 30-year-old. And I know what student debt can do. I know it personally as well. So that's another factor, I think, that we're monitoring and watching. What is that doing? And
so,
then lack of housing, lack of product. It's that whole supply and demand. I mean, that's just tremendously been impacting the market.
Let's talk about that lack of product, the supply of residential housing.
Sure. I think a lot of it, it's just the realtor having conversations with their clients. If they've got a client base, if they've been in this business, someone like me, if I'm talking with my clients about their property and is it time to move, what type of equity do they have, I think that there's still that fear from going through the housing crisis and the Great Recession of, I don't want to get myself into that. I'm afraid of what could potentially happen. Are we, experiencing a bubble? There's all of those questions in the homeowners' minds to not be certain, and that's where the realtor can come in if they're having those conversations.
What can the realtor do, if anything, in terms of on the supply side? There's very little leverage that one has as a realtor, I would imagine.
Yeah, just I think getting the message out. So I think that the consumers, the homeowners are so heavily swayed by what they're seeing sometimes in the news, where they think that I don't want to be a part of that because there's not enough houses, there's not this, and I don't want to get involved in the craziness of this real estate market, where the realtor can help guide them through that process and make it a much more comfortable process for them if the time is right. But we can't create the right time for the homeowner.
If you were advising, and you have just done so recently, I imagine, with your offspring, if you were advising someone in their 20s, late 20s, maybe early 20s, looking for their first home out of college, what kind of advice would you give that young professional person?
I would say the first piece of advice would be to talk with a lender so that they're pre-approved, so that they know not only do they know what they can borrow, but they know what they're comfortable with payment-wise. They know what their position is. They've got a pre-approval letter in hand so that they, when they are ready to write an offer, when they have found the home that they really like, especially if they're in competition with other buyers, they're able to then make that offer and show that they have the ability to go forward with the pre-approval letter as well. Just looking into that, looking into, sometimes we'll talk with buyers and encourage them, maybe write a letter to that homeowner about the appeal that home has to you. Sometimes there's the emotional side of that activity as well, and that may be what propels their offer to a higher position.
Now, that advice about getting pre-approved for a loan is not exactly the newest advice I've ever heard in my lifetime. But I know that you've brought it up as the first thing on your mind, because I'm certain that it's very tightly tied to the tightness of the market.
Absolutely.
If you're not ready to immediately make an offer, you're never going to close it. You'll always be too late.
Yeah, you might miss the opportunity. Absolutely. The other aspect of that, and I think the other thing that is very important with that, is getting pre-approved with, you know, potentially a local lender, going to some of the online availability as far as getting pre-approved. Sometimes that will not be the most reliable information. So that's something that when buyers come in to me and say, you know, I'm pre-approved, I found this online, I'll always offer them the opportunity to talk with a local lender. I'll give them a couple names and say, it's always good to get a second opinion, because you might find that it's much more advantageous for you to go another way. And if you don't, you might just be that more clear in your mind and that much happier that you made the choice that you made.
And you
but
can
either
ask,
way, just to know.
You can ask questions and have a discussion with a real person.
Exactly. It kind of goes back to that old, you know, when you learn, you got to get a couple opinions.
I'm here this morning on Community Matters with Alicia Chauvin, president of the South Shore Realtors Association, and we're talking about residential real estate in southeastern Wisconsin. Alicia, if you were continuing to counsel this young professional in her 20s or early or late 20s, what else would you tell he or she to be thinking about in terms of trying to buy that first starter property? Any other suggestions in terms of size, timing?
Yeah, I think that it really comes down to the conversation with them to help determine what their needs and wants are with a property, and to be able to have a clear understanding of what that is so that I can best help them, especially when there is a market that is so fast-paced. I think that's probably the most important is understanding what their needs are.
You were recently at a conference a few days ago with respect to housing developments. Tell us a little bit about that conference you were at. What was it? Where were you? And what did you learn? What did you bring back from that conference?
Sure. That was actually just yesterday. We were at Realtor and Government Day at the Capitol in Madison, Wisconsin. And that is Wisconsin Realtors Association. We do this once a year. I've done this for the past several years. And I think that it's just a really good experience for us to understand how big of a footprint. You know, this isn't something that these issues are affecting us just here locally. For the most part, they're statewide, potentially countrywide. So, you know, we discussed some of the issues that Wisconsin is seeing and trying to deal with on a state level with our legislature. So we were able to actually go into a breakout session with our legislators and have discussions with them pertaining specifically to Kenosha and Racine and some of the things that we're seeing and the challenges that we're having.
Well, tell us a little bit more about what you learned and what's the outlook, and what's the outlook for being able to build affordable housing? What are they telling you at this meeting?
Well, the housing affordability and supply was a tremendous part of the conversation. This is absolutely something that's affecting our area in Kenosha and Racine, as well as statewide. But Kenosha and Racine definitely has a spotlight on it due to the growth and everything that's happening in our area. And so what was discussed was what the challenges are, as well as some potential solutions, some prospective bills that are being put together to try and figure out how to handle those circumstances, and having the conversations with the legislators about those, you know, those suggestions and what their thoughts were. A couple of the suggestions that we talked about that I found very interesting was working to reform some of the neighborhoods. And we've seen some of that already in Kenosha, 10, 15 years ago. I remember seeing some of the areas that were in need of restoration. I mean, the homes were in bad condition, and the city came in and actually redeveloped. They redeveloped not only the homes but the streets and how the flow of the area went. And those homes still look just as beautiful. There is a pride of ownership. That's one of, you know, just one of the shining things about home ownership is that's the American dream. What, you know, people are very proud of that.
When a neighborhood is redeveloped that way, is it all about teardowns and new construction, or is it also, or maybe even more importantly, about, when possible, restoring buildings to their former beauty and usefulness so that all the housing stock doesn't look like it was built yesterday?
Right. That absolutely was a part of the conversation, was actually restoring versus tear down and rebuild. Because we do have a lot of homes, a lot of product available to us that could be restored, and that would cost a lot less than, you know, to tear down and rebuild. And it still, again, it creates that taking it back to its original charm versus creating new.
What else did you learn at this conference? This is fascinating. did they talk about any other solutions or any specific kinds of legislation that our listeners would want to know about and maybe speak to their legislators about?
Sure. We talked about creating a more diverse housing stock was another one where, you know, you think of new construction and the cost of new construction and the impact fees that the builders are paying immediately just to develop raises those prices so high that they're not necessarily a first-time buyer product. And so we were looking at, you know, what about creating duplexes, triplexes, you know, apartments, you know, courtyard building projects, townhouses, all of those. How do you work with that dynamic? Because that's going to create so much more diversity visually as well as availability for consumers.
Did you learn anything about the affordability of those, relative affordability of those? And are there issues of density that need to be addressed to bring some of those solutions to bear from your standpoint?
Well, I think that we did talk a lot about that, and I know that is a big challenge, is trying to figure out how do you put all the pieces of the puzzle in place for making that work.
Yeah, it was... I hear a lot of very interesting proposals. The small houses for veterans is a wonderful idea, but I have a hard time understanding how that can be scaled up. You know, there was a time when you could build a small house on a small lot, and it was legal, and people raised families in those homes, mm-hmm. and they were all healthy and had wonderful lives. Now we have different ideas about that, and frankly, a lot of discrimination goes on by insisting on a certain lot size or insisting on a number of square feet. So I see some really big political issues here that are social and cultural, as well as the simple, relatively simple by comparison, to my point of view, dollars and cents of building. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well,
I mean, the politics of some of this is very difficult.
Right, and very intertwined between. So we were at this event, we were talking about it from the perspective of a state level, and actually that was brought up, you know, the tiny homes, and what about, you know, these areas where they're requiring 10-acre lots versus, you know, a quarter-acre lot. And there, that's where I say it's so intertwined, because that's not only the state can only do so much, and then you're having to deal with the county and the municipality to work with. How do we fix this? Is this really necessary? Is this in the best interest of our community, of our area? And that's where it gets so intertwined that it's not just an easy fix.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but it horrifies as well as amuses me sometimes to see the discussions about density and whether it should be an extra floor or not. I once had a long talk with some law enforcement officials off mic about this, and I said, well, what's the ironclad relationship between density and crime that people are so fearful of? And they told me, said, well, there really isn't, you know, the crime rates of so much per thousand. And whether they're spread out or packed together, it doesn't really make a difference. Mm. But this is not what the popular mind thinks. They think density, high rise equals crime. And that really exists in the popular mind. So those are really tough things to factor in. But yeah, I'm an old guy. I'm 75, and I think if I were coming out of graduate school today and trying to rent an apartment in Kenosha, like I did a few decades back, I would have a heck of a time making ends meet today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I would have done it.
Sure. Yeah. That's. The cost to rent, and that is something that I have some experience with, just being an owner of a rental property and watching, you know, the rents go up and knowing, you know, while in a lot of cases, the person who is choosing to rent could choose to buy. You know, that could be a mortgage payment. And wondering and having those conversations with the renters to say, why would you choose to rent versus buy? What is the appeal to that? So I don't know it on the bigger scale, but I know it on the littler scale of asking those questions to people that I've known. And the biggest answer that I've gotten back is the flexibility to be able to relocate, to be able to move, because of the fact that there is so much growth in the community as far as employment coming in. And wanting the flexibility to be able to relocate with their job if that need arises.
Well, I know I had the kind of career where I expected that I'd be moving at least once a decade. And so I was always terrified to buy.
Interesting.
Until very late in life, actually. And it seems to me that maybe that's really accelerating now. You're interesting to hear you talk about so many people finding themselves in a situation where a mortgage and a rental payment would be almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
What's the impact of that from your perspective as a realtor and a commentator on your hometowns?
Sure. I think that when you're looking at that, again, it's just the preference of the consumer to know what are the reasons that they're making the choices that they're making, because that's what you have to understand. And
it could be from lack of knowledge and understanding.
Exactly.
Which is why maybe talking to a realtor is a good idea, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, in that conversation that I had just very recently, the renter had said to me, you know, I don't want the responsibility of maintenance for the property. And that would have never even been a thought in my mind for that, where I'm like, well, you could just buy a home warranty if that's a big concern. You could buy a home warranty and have that protection in place so that you're not so concerned about a furnace going out or a hot water heater, stuff like that. So that was something that just completely surprised me. I didn't expect it. And then I think we also have people coming in from other areas where our rental rates do not seem so exorbitant. In my case, I have somebody coming from California that she didn't think anything of it. And I was just like, wow, you know, that's going down in rental rate for her versus, you know, what we think of.
What do you think would motivate a builder to come in and want to build a subdivision or a high rise for rental in the Kenosha Racine area? Is this an attractive area for me to come in as a builder and build housing? And if so, what kind of housing? Or are there so many unfavorables in terms of whatever it might be, tax, zoning, popular opinion, what you have to go through to get the neighborhood and the aldermen to approve? What are the ups and downs from the point of view of the builder that you've heard about that influence the situation, Alicia?
Well, I would say I think it's very clear that Kenosha and Racine are attracting attention. I don't think that there's any way not to see that with all of the growth and development that's happening in this area. I think just its proximity alone, if you look at being in between Milwaukee and Chicago, that's always been a huge attraction for this area ever since I can remember. I can remember hearing that because we have the proximity to both of them, but we don't have to live in either of them. And so now we're starting to get the tremendous amount of growth in both Kenosha and Racine. And so from the perspective of a builder, if I were looking at that, I would see that as attractive because along with the growth of industry and everything that's happening here, people need homes. So that would be the attraction as a builder, in my perspective. They have to look at the whole picture and determine, you know, what are my costs to build? What product can I build? How can I meet the needs and the demands of the consumers coming in there? Those things have to be taken into consideration as well. But I think if you're looking at it just from the perspective of, is this a good place to build? I think the builders see that.
Well, that's encouraging. I heard a statistic just this week that I didn't have a chance to check at the sources, but it sounded exactly right, that there is not a county in the United States of America where a person working 40 or 50 hours for minimum wage can afford a two-bedroom apartment for their family, which is really kind of mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the way it was when I grew up as a kid, let me tell you.
Right, yeah. Growing up, I mean, that was your objective, to be old enough to get your first apartment, for sure. And I think that, you know, there's so many dynamics that play into that. I think, you know, the kids are going to school. They're staying in their homes longer with their parents. Those sorts of things are happening that, you know, maybe didn't happen in my generation or your generation, where it was very traditional that people went to work or went to school and work right out of high school. So I think times are changing too.
Were there other things from this big statewide realtors conference and development of the housing conference you were at in Madison this week to share with us?
Well, we actually talked about several issues. We were talking about a concern, actually, that I hadn't been really aware of, and that pertains to flowages and riparian rights for owners on flowages, which I learned being at this event in Kenosha and Racine. There's a couple, what I know as lakes, one of them being Lake Montgomery out in Salem, is considered a flowage.
What does that mean?
That the flowage, what I learned from this was that with lakes, the property owners have riparian rights to be able to utilize the water and to put a pier or a deck on.
You can use the shoreline. You can fish there. You can put up a pier,
right.
Tie up a boat,
yep.
Something small.
So, yeah, so this pertained primarily to the piers, because when it's a flowage versus a lake, there is an entity that owns the bed of the ground. It's a man-made lake versus a natural. And so there was a concern from a lawsuit that happened a couple years ago that created a law that did not allow these property owners to maintain the piers, potentially.
Hmm.
So that was a huge challenge for property owner rights that I think property owners didn't even know was coming. So the realtors were all there to advocate for the property owners to make sure that we're looking out for them in these circumstances and not letting one court case and one situation affect all of the people that could be affected by this. So so that was something that I had just learned more about, and I actually know somebody who lives on Montgomery Lake, and I wonder if they even know about this. So it was interesting.
When you would be sitting down talking to people who are looking for their first rental or just need to find another apartment or maybe one with an extra room. What should people do? How do you intelligently search for a rental property in Kenosha and Racine? And what are the questions that you should be asking when you're looking for a rental property, both of the property owner or the realtor you're working with? And what questions should you be asking of yourself in terms of budget?
Sure. I don't do a whole lot with rentals, so that's it's a little bit different there. We have a rental company. We've got My Dwelling within the brokerage that I work that deals with rentals. But I would say when I worked in property management, it was figuring out what are the needs of the prospective renter as far as size, as far as location, and then looking for those specific, to meet those needs as best you can, creating a checklist to say, you know, do you need to be within 45 minutes of work? That's going to be this area, of town. Or does it matter that you're close to childcare? Or, you know, what are the driving forces for making the decision that you're going to make? As well as, obviously, you've got to have a certain rental amount. You know, they're going to have a budget.
If I were to ask you, what's the picture in 2020 for me being able to find a selection of two-bedroom apartments that I could look at in the Kenosha Racine area, what would you tell me my outlook would be this year?
Well, it does sound like there is some building going on. So there's going to be newer apartments, rental rate. I think that there's some higher end apartments available. There are the apartment complexes that have been in existence since I was in property management 20 years ago or longer. You know, I worked at Hidden Oak Estates and Pleasant Prairie when it was brand new. I helped, you know, watch all of those go up, and that was considered unreal. You know, from being a Kenosha girl, hearing what they were asking for rents at those times, I was like, that's unbelievable. I can't understand how people would pay that. They filled up like hotcakes. So
and they're pretty nice-looking buildings, too.
Yeah, they're beautiful apartments, and it was just a learning curve for me to go, wow, you know, there is a demand for this. I guess I didn't realize that it was that strong.
The last census, and we're getting ready for a new one, but after the last census, the experts said that Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth were going to continue to have the highest growth rate in the state, and they didn't see an end to it. I imagine that's increased to the nth degree with what's going on with the economy and local businesses, all the businesses moving here or building extra facilities here and Foxconn. How does that seem to you?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the growth, we're seeing such tremendous growth. And, you know, with everything with Foxconn, but there's also such tremendous growth in Kenosha County as well, when you're looking at Haribo coming in and Uline just keeps expanding and Amazon and some of those other big names, big industries coming in Pleasant Prairie. You know, look at the growth even in Pleasant Prairie over the last 5 to 10 years. It's tremendous.
A sleepy Pleasant Prairie is not so sleepy any longer, is it?
Right.
The quality of housing stock in Kenosha has been an issue my lifetime, vis-a-vis Racine. And I've noticed that if you go to a college campus here, there's a disproportionate number of people who seem to have chosen to live in Racine, and when you ask them, they'll tell you it's the quality of the housing. I've heard that innumerable times. From your point of view, do you think that's going to start to change, or do you think my premise is utterly wacky?
Well, I think price point is what I've heard. Maybe not quality, because I think that quality...
I'm not thinking about quality of construction. Thank you for correcting me. I'm thinking more in terms of price point.
Sure. Yeah, price point. The taxes, I think, are a little bit less in Racine if you're looking at it from the bigger picture. But I think even that has really leveled off. I think that they're pretty close tax base-wise to what they're paying. And then I think, the price of the house, though, oftentimes if you're looking at a three-bedroom, one-bath house, oftentimes you'll see that the price is a little bit lower in Racine.
There's a lot of difference in the quality of interior finishing, too, between developments. And I think that probably has a fair amount of interest in that, too, from what people have told me interpersonally.
That could, if you're looking at newer construction, you're looking at existing homes where somebody is looking to resell a home, then you have the full spectrum. I mean, right. You have somebody who completely rehabbed it, and then you have ones that not a single thing has been touched since it was built. So it's kind of fun to see the variation with that.
If you were counseling someone to go into your business, what would you tell them? Every so often I run into friends and colleagues that have decided to take on a second career as a realtor or switch altogether. You're the boss, so to speak, of the association. If someone came to you and said, Alicia, I'm thinking of becoming a realtor, what do you think?
I would say it's just an amazing career choice. I absolutely love what I do every day. And I'm thankful to be able to work in such a dynamic, diverse, every day is different kind of business. It does not come without its challenges. And I think that there's a perception out there that, you know, real estate can be easy, and that is not the case at all. There are a lot of moving parts always. We have to be able to listen very carefully to the people that we're working with to do our best to help them through the transaction. And if you're not, it can go horribly wrong. And, you know, there's so many moving parts. There's the mortgage company, there's the home inspector, there's the appraiser. And we are involved in all of those different aspects of the transaction. So understanding them and constantly honing our skills to do the best that we can to serve the home buyer or the home seller is critical.
Before the big real estate bubble, there was a lot of talk about the country being just lousy with realtors. Every time you walked around the corner, there was another realtor there trying to sell you something. And there was some talk that there was oversaturated. Do you feel that's the case still?
That it's oversaturated now?
Yeah.
I mean, definitely the numbers are up for realtors. I think that the challenge probably, again, is just the perception of, is this an easy profession? There's the transition to brokers offering services online and then, you know, training and all of those things, and realtors wanting to do this part-time versus full-time. That can be a challenge as well, because in real estate, we work around everybody else's schedule. So when everybody else is at work from 8 to 4, 9 to 5, you know, whatever their hours are, we're taking those calls or we're showing those properties or we're going to meet with the seller after hours. And there's only so many hours in a day. So when somebody wants to try and do this part-time, that can be very challenging if they don't have a support system in place to be able to get those people where they need to be and be able to communicate with them effectively.
And you've been a realtor now, an official realtor, for how long?
I am, I want to say, April, going into my 20th year.
That's terrific. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Alicia Chauvin, president of the South Shore Realtors Association, I'd like you to leave us with some parting advice as to if we're looking to move up, move out, downsize. You might want to comment a little bit about downsizing. It's relevant to a lot of my friends and family right now who are all getting on in years. I have an aunt who's going to be moving out of her home after being there forever. And she had quite a struggle trying to find a place that was appropriate and affordable. Do you have any comments about that?
I think the best comment I could say is consult your trusted advisor, your trusted realtor, and let them help you through the process, because I do think that we do have a lot of resources available to us that we can help that process go smoother and also to be able to calm the fears. There's a lot of fear. That is actually one other thing that we talked about was people staying in their homes longer. And I think a lot of that just comes from fear of, where do I go? What's it going to be like? I know what this is. I've been here for, you know, 40 years, 50 years. I know what to expect here. So
people are staying in their homes longer now than, say, 20, 30 years ago?
That was part of the conversation at the at the Realtor and Government Day yesterday was, you know, is that a fact in why there is a housing shortage? So it's an interesting dynamic that we're definitely looking into some more.
Well, thank you. I wasn't aware of that. And thank you again. Our guest today has been the president of the South Shore Realtors Association, Alicia Chauvin of Shore West Realtors. Thank you so much for being a part of Community Matters today. And as I always like to remind our listeners, please get informed and get involved. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support comes from Jack Andrea. Hosting a cocktail party or office luncheon, Jack's Cafe is proud to announce their catering options, including sandwich platters, charcuterie boards, takeaway soups, and more. Contact info at jackandrea.com to start planning your event menu.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Racine County is offering trauma-informed care training. The next session will be Thursday, February 27th at the Racine County Dennis Kornwolf Service Center. Visit TIC Training at racinecounty.org.
WGTD-FM is now available on your smart speaker. Simply say, play WGTD on TuneIn and hear WGTD programming. 24/7